From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever-wonderful, ever-vampiric, ever-cape-wearing, and forever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my friend, my producer, the wonderful, the cheesy, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count.
Oh, hey, Bob. How's it going? Great to be back. The veil is, No. It's not?
No.
4th of July, though.
Just means the veil's full of gunpowder and phosphate.
Oh, okay. Well, it's not as thin as then.
No, it's not the 4th of July. It's the 5th when we're recording the 5th. This. Yeah.
Well, it's still the patriotic month, I guess. But yes, Bob, hopefully everybody there had a good holiday. But as we stand, as we're filming this on July 5th, I could still hear fireworks off yonder.
So we hear them in the distance, because where we do record this, you know, we're based on south suburbs of Chicago, northwest Indiana, and Indiana folk will blow off fireworks for the next 2 to 3 days,
at least, maybe
the next 2 or 3 weeks.
So if you hear things in the background, we're safe.
We're safe.
It's just fireworks.
Yes. And our hearts and thoughts and prayers and unfortunately, we have to, everything that's going on in Highland Park, Illinois right now, that's absolutely devastating.
Yeah.
It's, you know, in our backyard, and I had a lot of fans reaching out to me yesterday being like, oh, you know, are you out there or whatever? No, unfortunately, I was here. Unfortunately, stuff like that did happen, so we are thinking about the folk over in Highland Park, Illinois today.
Yeah,
that's for sure. Absolutely devastating, and it's a shame that things like that have to happen, and especially this close to home. It's kind of a strange pill to swallow, to say the least. But let's move on again, folks. Thinking about people, and remember that we love and care about you. Count Panic, we weren't here last week, so let's get a two week update from you.
Yeah, Bob. You know,
sports ball.
Trying to stay cool around these parts. It's getting hot out there, Bob. Summertime is in full effect. Today, no different than the past few days here. Just trying to, you know, get some shade. Even vampires, I know they don't go out into the sun too often, but even when nighttime, it just seems way too hot. But doing that, of course, staying cool and just kind of chugging along this summer, Bob. Just chugging along. How about you? How you been?
Oh, dealing with this heat, man.
Yeah.
It is hot.
It is hot.
Today, miserable hot.
How hot is it?
Oh, you know, it's so hot that I could bake an egg on the sidewalk.
Oh, there you go.
An egg. Someone out there is going to be like, Bob, you need to go back to your enunciation classes.
Pretty hot.
That very hot day. My holiday was okay, too. I spent most of it not feeling 100%. I hurt my back and just was dealing with some nonsense outside of that. So I had a pretty calm day. Did a Bob Anderson tradition on the 4th of July. I've been doing it since I was a little kid. Sci-Fi Channel used to do 24 hours Twilight Zone marathon on 4th of July, and I did that since I was a kid up until they stopped doing it. So luckily for me, I subscribe, and they don't sponsor this show, which they should. Paramount Plus has the entire series on stream, so pop on Paramount Plus and got a chance to stream some of my favorite episodes, and it's some of that writing holds up, man. I mean, some of it, all of it holds up really well. It's still a really well-made show.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was my holiday. How was yours?
I didn't know Sci-Fi stopped doing that. That's a shame.
They stopped doing it a couple of years ago and made me very grumpy.
Yeah, it's too bad because people love that series. And you're right. A lot of those Twilight Zone episodes from yesteryear still ring true to this day. It's rather spooky how much they haven't changed over time and the messages that they kind of give out in some of those episodes. So, Bob, I think you had a good holiday all in all.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Without further ado, folks, if this is your first time ever watching or listening to an episode of Bob After Dark, we are your weekly-ish, we say ish because sports ball happens, we are your weekly-ish paranormal show where we talk about legends, lore, and supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, and of course, Count Panic's favorite vegetable to make in the stir fry.
Stir fry? Broccoli, right? Is that that's a
you can do anything. Peppers, broccoli.
Come on, you gotta put some broccoli in that syrup.
Oh, goodness.
You know, I grew I used to hate broccoli. Now I get a big kick out of broccoli. Go to, you know, local I know they're not a sponsor, but the local Panda Express. Broccoli and beef, Bob.
Listen, Panda Express. we're looking for a paranormal show to sponsor.
The broccoli and beef.
You slide into these DMs, Panda.
Broccoli and beef.
Broccoli and beef. I'll skip the beef, but.
Broccoli. Broccoli and broccoli.
So if this is.
Goat cheese, too, by the way.
Goat cheese.
Yeah.
Goat cheese. Like, goat.
No, just cheese in general, but you could.
I thought you said goat cheese.
No, you could have. It's good with cheese, but you could have goat cheese if you like.
Oh, okay. I don't put cheese in my stir fry.
No, but on broccoli.
Oh, cheese on broccoli. Yeah. Let's move on. This isn't Bob After Cooking. So if this is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark and you're confused why we're talking about broccoli and not the paranormal,
broccoli.
We do split the show up into a couple parts. Our first part's where we talk about weird, spooky news stories of the week. This is where we find the weird paranormal stories that hit the major news outlets and also weird things that go on in the world of science that borderline on science fiction are just general weird and creepy. You guys, the fans, send these in. I review them, and Count Panic doesn't know them going in, and he has his own take on them. Yeah. And of course, second half of the episode of the week, we have the lore of the week. That's a lot of times I say week in one sentence. Mm-hmm. It's where we take the pages right straight from the Dr. Ben Vanderson's diary, and we look forward to getting a chance to tell the story. And this week, we have a couple really cool folk joining us to talk a little bit about this. We don't have them live yet, but Count, you want to tell us a little bit about who will be joining us here shortly?
Well, they will be on very shortly. We got the Zoom up and running here soon too, so I just want to make sure that they are on. So when they get on here, we're gonna have we're gonna do live mic testing on the air too.
Oh, that's great! I love live mic tests on the air. But I know they're just kind of getting settled in. I know that it's kind of they were saying they might be running a couple minutes late. So plan for them to come on after the news segment.
We got them pumped up. I want to hear what their mics sound like. So.
Okay, sounds good.
Sit tight, guys. Sit tight.
Okay. Are we so you want them ready to move on to the news article?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, and we'll take a little break. We'll get the microphones queued up.
Yeah,
and then we'll be ready to go. How's that sound?
I'm confident the mics will work, but yes.
Yeah, I'm not. That's why we'll take a quick break because in podcast land, I get to edit that out. All right, so you ready to move on to our first story of the evening?
Yeah.
Okay, so this isn't written by Tim Benall. So we're not to that point yet, but this is found this one on Oddity Central. Body floating in water canal turns out to be a meditating old man. A number of people in Bangkok, Thailand, were shocked to find that an old man they saw floating in a dirty water canal turned out not to be a corpse, but a meditating person. Imagine walking by an urban water canal and spotting a stiff body floating down a dirty garbage-filled water. You most likely expect to be the worst, so no one can really blame the person who witnessed the scene at the end of the last month, so very tail end of June, and they call the police. But before authorities could get there, some of the people on the banks of the canal tried to shout at the floating body to make sure he was truly dead. And one brave man even dived into the dirty, garbage-filled water to pull the person out. And when he touched his body, the man sprung to life. Quote goes, "We thought he was already dead. Everyone was shouting, but he was not moving," said the rescuer Somar Promvig. Told local reporters, sorry folks, I don't speak the local Taiwanese language, so I do apologize if I butchered that pronunciation. When someone tried to pull him out of the water, he suddenly talked and he said, "I'm not dead, I'm just meditating." Mm. After helping man out of the canal, an ambulance was summoned to do a health checkup on the old man, and the staff found that he was sober, good mental health, and good health, probably due to some of that meditation. So he went home with a suggestion to, and I quote, "find a better place to meditate."
Yeah.
Hashtag panic state.
You know, it's probably best. You always got to find the proper place to meditate, Bob. Maybe some of these places aren't the best. But he was in a deep meditation.
Meditation. You were absolutely correct.
Yeah, so it was hard to maybe figure out if he was still alive or not. But you're right. When you're going to meditate, do it in a place where people don't think you're dead, basically.
You know what? Excuse me, folks.
Choked up this story.
That story's got me choked up. Sorry. No, you look at the stories of people that do like the really deep spiritual meditation.
Yeah.
And sometimes these places where they go and what they do, they really need to put themselves in a trance. And sometimes you put yourself in a trance in a very uncomfortable position or an uncomfortable place. There are stories of monks who meditate on bags of rice because the idea is that you're trying to not necessarily hurt, but try to understand what the hurt means. So maybe in this case, this gentleman decided that he was going to meditate in a dirty water to feel as if he was one with the river and feeling like why this was going on around him. Whatever the case might be, I'm just glad the guy was okay, because that could have turned out really bad.
Yeah, that's the main thing.
So, folks, if you're out there doing deep meditation, make sure you deep meditate in a very safe place.
Yeah, your house. I mean, probably just a place where you're away from people, wouldn't you want to be?
Yes.
I think so, yeah.
All right, let's move on. Yeah. Guess who wrote this next article?
Oh, your good friend?
Tim Banal from Coast to Coast AM. Tim Banal writes, "A bizarre orc remains washed ashore in Egypt. A woman walking along a beach in Egypt was aghast when she stumbled upon the hideous remains of a mysterious sea creature, which she said looked like the monster from The Lord of the Rings. The nightmarish find, which I have some photos I'll share on the Children of the Night Facebook page after this, was reportedly made by Andrea Judd and some of her friends when visiting the popular diving site near the Gabar El Bint, near the coastal community of Dahab. As they strolled along the shore, she spotted the curious carcass in the sand and couldn't believe her eyes. I didn't touch it. Just looking at it made me feel uneasy," Judd recalled. "It freaked me out, and it looked like a lot like a Lord of the Rings orc." That's ORC. To that end, she noted that the aquatic oddity sported a distinctive head with an open mouth showing sharp teeth. Any relation you count?
That's maybe one of my cousins.
And it's then its skin was dry, but dark gray and patchy. The creature's cranium sat atop a long, curled body that Judd compared to that of a seahorse. Proving to have taken a good look at the dead animal, she also noted that it approximately the length of my arm, and that the head was bigger than my fist. Ultimately, Judd mused that the monstrous of the deep was gruesome to look at and reminded somebody of the reality of death. Curious to as the strange remains could have been, Judd snapped a picture of the beast and posted it to a marine biology Facebook group. As one imagined, horrified observers observed a variety of ideas, with some jokingly suggesting that the creature was a mermaid or a mini, your favorite, the Loch Ness Monster. More seasoned sea life enthusiasts offered a more logical explanation that the animal appeared to be a moray eel that had been looked so monstrosity by blistering in the sun. Though that may not be the case, Judd observed that there was something else weird about the discovery, is she found the carcass fairly inland and much farther than the waves would have carried, which raises the question of how it ended up there in the first place. And this thing looks horrifying. Hashtag panic steak.
Again, another eerie creature just kind of showing up here. Now, I know you described there, Bob, but there was no, and there was some kind of assumptions being made about maybe what class of a cryptid it could possibly be in. But anything that this sticks out to you as far as what? It's got to be one of these creatures?
Looks like an orc.
An orc.
It looks like a small orc attached to a seahorse body. Some sort of strange cryptid creature.
This is the first of its kind.
It might be, according to the marine biologist. They're saying it's some sort of eel, but that don't look like any eel I've ever seen. Well, it's definitely spooky. I'll post some pictures. I'm curious to hear what you guys think.
Yeah.
So head on over to the Children of the Night page. I'll have that pinned up through next week.
An orc.
An orc.
Yeah.
You know, the big dudes beating up on the hobbits.
Yeah, the orc. Yeah, that's where it was taken, right? That's the actual orc, right?
That's the actual orc.
Yeah.
All right. So.
Hobbits, too.
Hobbits, yes. The water hobbits, you see.
Water hobbits.
Yeah. All right. I got one more news story for us. You ready?
Sure.
All right. Moving on. We have one more here, and this is ghostly encounters cause students to abandon dormitory in India. Can you guess who wrote this?
As this previous author.
Tim Banal with Coast to Coast AM. Dormitory in India. By the way, folks, I don't speak the native Indian languages, so I might butcher these quite a bit. Just bear with me, okay? A dormitory in India may soon be vacant following a series of ghostly encounters that sparked such a panic that all of the residents of the building have decided to leave the spooky site altogether. According to a local media report, the weird case began late last month at the Kasturbara Gandhi Girls Hostel, where three separate students reported seeing an eerie apparition dressed entirely in, can you guess what color? White.
White?
Always a person.
Yeah, you're right.
Goofing
about
me
that.
Up
yeah.
here. The sight of the unsettling interloper was apparently so troubling that each of the witnesses become sick from the experience and subsequently fled the dormitory. However, this was the only of the beginning of the situation that has left the school administrators scrambling. The day after the ghost sighting caused a commotion in the dormitory, and other two students both reported seeing the unnerving figure and falling ill after their experience. Faced with the outbreak of a paranormal activity in the building, school officials had a meeting with the parents of the remaining students in an effort to ease concerns over what had occurred in recent days. Alas, it would seem that their attempt at supernatural damage control was all for naught, as administrators all informed that all 50 of the remaining residents have decided that they were going to vacate the dormitory due to the ghostly presence. It is uncertain if the school can convince the remaining residents to change their mind or if the dormitory will ultimately wind up being permanently vacant. Should the latter scenario unfold, however, administrators will likely have a difficult time trying to fill these rooms in the near future, as this is actually the second ghost to scare the sweep through the building following a similar incident that occurred on site in 2018, wound up making headlines throughout the country, with recent events serving to bolster the site's reputation for being haunted. Convincing new students to move into the dormitory now will undoubtedly be something of a hard sell. Hashtag panic's taken. I'm going to be getting on a soapbox after this.
Yeah, well, again, you got to be cautious at some point. But always in white. You are right about that, Bob, because there's never an apparition out there that's dressed in blue. Dressed in green, dressed in red.
We talked about the ghost in red not that long ago, or the ghost in green. Yeah,
more often than not.
It's always the lady in white. It's always a lady in white, Count Panic. It never ceases to amaze me.
95% of the time, it's a person. Specifically, probably a lady there in white. So, but again, these folks out of cautiousness, evacuating. I mean, if you saw a ghost, Bob, well, I know you wouldn't back away, but the majority of people would say, hey, you know what? I'm going to let this one be here.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So I know. What would you do, though, in that situation?
One, play damage control better than that.
Oh, okay.
Keep in mind, I'm not an expert on Native Indian Indian cultures, right? Because there's different cultures that make up the country. It's one of the most populated countries in the entire world. So there is definitely a mix of people that live there. I am not certain how the individual cultures take the paranormal. For example, if you look at some countries around the world, they take paranormal very seriously, and I'm talking more serious than our culture, and they believe it to be some sort of curse. Some think of it as a blessing. It just depends on where you're at. I'm not 100% sure what these people, what this particular group of people in that particular section of India believe. The only substance I have on this is because I get to see our demographics every week, and I know for a fact we're on India's number one podcasting network, and I see a number of listeners. I'm going to assume that they are okay with paranormal investigations going on, and I'm also going to assume that they would be okay with a certain paranormal investigation group going in there and making sure that they can either A, prove that there is paranormal activity and find out whatever it's going to do to cause it to stop because different cultures have different beliefs, and B, if there's no paranormal activity, then we get to be the certain heroes of the story, and that makes things great because then you can move people back into the dormitories and the certain paranormal investigator gets a chance to, you know, be like, oh, I was able to prove something wrong. And would you like to know which paranormal investigators I think are meant for the job, Count Panic?
Who's that?
I believe it's you and I.
Oh, we're doing it.
Right?
Okay.
So listen, to the people out there who are in the particular Kasturbara Gandhi Girls Hostel, if you are listening to this, or if you can get information to them, We are cheap dates. Pay for our travel, pay for our lodging. You don't have to pay us extra, but pay us what we have to do to get there. And let's do exclusive shooting and whatnot. We'll go there, do a full investigation, and Count Panic and I will determine whether or not you have a haunting. And if you do, we will do whatever it takes to help clear that out, so that way there you guys can move people back in and everybody's happy at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So I want to see people be able to live at the university and be able to get a good education as well.
So, I mean, this is a well-crafted plan you have here, Bob.
And I made it up on the spot.
Well,
I read the article early and I'm like, man, you hear these stories. Like, remember the French family who was living out on their balcony?
Yeah.
I don't know the outcome of that story. Yeah. Nobody ever, this is one of those things where it's like native French people. Are they going to be able to get in touch with us or not? You know, you hear stories like that and, you get paranormal stories where, like, I'm hearing knocks and it's keeping me awake at night. But when it's, paranormal stories where it's legitimately causing, like, unsettling fear in the air and you're moving people out or you're causing actual torment, that's when I want to step in and help people. I'm not in it for a buck or something like that. I want to legitimately help people with these cases when it's legitimately that bad. And, I would legitimately like to see people be able to move back in and be able to go to university so they could get their education. I know that's very important. So if India, if you need our help, you know how to reach us.
Yeah, our phone works in both directions. Call us up, India, then we'll give you a call back as well. We'll be there. Why not?
What's our phone number, Count Panic?
Here it's 219-845-1100. The number is 219-845-1100. If you're catching this on the live program on WGLBG.TV. If not, enjoy in podcast form.
Pop and podcast lane, you can call because we're live every Tuesday-ish on 9 p.m.
Sports
Central.
Providing and everything.
Sports ball providing.
Yeah.
And I'm not joking, by the way. I know some people might be out there being like, oh, I'm going to pump the story up, whatever it might take. I'm being serious 100%. Like, I'm not joking. I want to help you guys. I want to help these people get back into school.
Yeah, because you think about they're just abandoned this place, right, basically?
Pretty much. It's abandoned now. They're worried that they can't get people to go back in there.
I'm sure it's a beautiful building, great for learning, and then now that folks won't go in there because there's it's haunted, though, Bob.
Yep.
But sometimes, even if you have a ghost in your house or ghost in your place, you kind of have to learn, if it's not really threatening or anything like that, you just kind of learn to bond with it and live as one with the ghost.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, Count Panic, we finished our news articles, and this is a quick PSA for everybody out there listening in podcast land. Head on over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review. Count Panic and I have not been promoting that lately because it slipped my mind.
5-star reviews.
5-star reviews. We read them live on air. Count Panic cheers you to whatever liquid he is drinking.
Which I do not have any.
He does not have any. So starting next week, we're going to make sure Count Panic has something to drink. He will cheers to you and we get that stuff going again. So make sure you leave a 5-star review and stick around. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Count Panic's going to introduce us to our guest, and we're going to be moving on to the Lore of the Week, which I'm really excited about. So, live audience, be right back. You're going to hear some mic checks, so stick with us. And for podcast land, you're about to be hearing words from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned. All right, we're good?
We're back, yeah. We're good. Back? Yeah.
Okay. Count Panic, what'd you do during break?
Bob, during break, I'm going to tell you what I did. I called up India.
What did India say? Or did they leave you on red?
They said they'll get back to me.
They'll get back to
me. But they're looking into it.
Would you like to know what I did?
What'd you
during
do?
Break? You know, what I did during break?
Yeah.
I took up something I've always wanted to take up.
What'd you take up?
Saxophone.
Saxophone?
Yeah, I took up saxophone.
Any songs?
Yet? No, I can't move my fingers that well.
Oh,
That coordination.
Get somebody else for that part.
Maybe I'll listen to it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Kenny G
played this the clarinet. And the clarinet, and he played a kind of flute thing.
A flute, yes.
A flute.
Yeah, no, magic flute.
Maybe he played the sax. Bill Clinton played the saxophone.
He did.
He had his own album too, I think.
A lot of famous people played the saxophone.
I digress. Now Count Panic.
Yeah.
We have some things we want to talk about.
We do, yes.
Yes. So would you like to we have our live guest on the docket here, and we're gonna introduce them, which I'm gonna have you do.
Well,
actually,
Here's the thing. For the live mic test, I'm gonna let them introduce themselves live on Zoom. Guys, can you hear me?
We can hear you just fine.
Oh, look at that. They're there, Bob.
That's great. Hi, guys. Welcome to the show. Count Panic, would you like to do some introductions?
What? Guys, introduce yourselves here for the crowd.
Thanks for having us. I'm Tommy Garcia.
I'm Kamani Garcia. We're the Garcias.
Hello, Garcias. Where are you guys from, and why are you on my show?
We are from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Now, for those of you who do not know, it is part of the United States. And we are on your show because our good friend Adam Venkman invited us, or introduced us.
And introduced us, yes. Yeah. Guys, for all of you that don't know, I don't like butchering a foreign language, and I don't like butchering a culture. I found one of my favorite ghost stories, and I sat down. I had all my research prepped. I sat down, and I was getting ready to start pronouncing things. I'm reading my notes to myself, and I realized I was going to screw some things up. So I was looking for people who could, you know, speak Spanish better than I can, and I was hoping to find somebody in the neck of the woods, and because I'm well-connected in the paranormal community, I found people from New Mexico that this ghost story is, you know, kind of attached to. And because it's extremely hot here in Chicago, I was trying to find a story from someplace hot as well, and New Mexico seemed like a very hot place, right? Well, what's the temp over by you guys?
Oh, ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's so hot here.
Yeah, it was reaching, what, 98 earlier?
Yeah. At least, yeah.
That's absolutely miserable. I think it hit 100 here with humidity, but your heat's a little different than our heat, and I know it could get hotter than that. So without further ado, tell us a little bit about yourselves. I know you guys have a show that we can't say the specific name of, but we could talk about it subjectively. We could dance around the actual name of things.
Well, we spelled it a certain way on purpose, so you could sort of dance around it. It's That's Some Scary S-H- exclamation point T.
We're gonna say stuff for the show, but you guys could, people at home, and we're a family
piece
friendly
it together
show, you guys could piece it together. But tell me a little bit about yourselves.
So what had happened was Kamani and I had been ghost hunting together for about 5 or 6 years, and about 2 years ago a buddy of mine who works at the local CBS affiliate with me decided we wanted to put together some sort of Unsolved Mysteries-esque show for YouTube. His name is Chad Brummett. He's another cast member on the show. He's also the photographer and one of the producers. So we put together this show along with our good friend, Mr. Jordan Jonas, who is a local magician and ghost tour guide.
Professional weirdo.
If you see this guy, he looks like Nikki Sixx. He's great. He's got the hair. He's got the makeup. He was built for ghost hunting. So we started this show here in New Mexico about 2 years ago now. And the premise of the show is pretty much Unsolved Mysteries meets Ghost Adventures. So what we do is we look into reportedly haunted places around the state. We go, we interview the owners, the employees, people that frequent the place. We do reenactments. That's the first half of the show. The second half of the show is we do a lockdown with all the cool ghost gear that you would see on Ghost Adventures, the SLS camera, the spirit boxes, EMF detectors, and we try to gather evidence. And we sort of just put it all together in a big package and then put it on YouTube.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Fantastic.
And you guys have been investigating, you said, 5 years?
Together, her and I, for about 5 years. The show has only been around for about a year and a half.
I started buying him ghost gear for his birthday. And
oh, so he pulled you in there, or did you pull him into it?
I think it was mutual pulling.
Excellent. See, so before we move into the story, because you guys have a really interesting story amongst yourselves, tell me what's some of your most favorite paranormal investigations you've ever done, or like what's the most interesting episode your catalog, like what's something that stands out, somebody could go and watch that you're a big fan of yourselves?
Well, let's see here. The most recent investigation was back in October, and you might have seen it on Ghost Adventures. There's a place here in Albuquerque called the Painted Lady Bed and Brew, and it used to be a brothel back around
100 years ago.
Yeah, turn of the century. And so everyone from Billy the Kid to Doc Holliday stayed there. And there was a local businessman who bought the place, renovated it, and turned it into a bed and brew. So you can go stay the night there. He has craft beer. It's a wonderful place. Well, he started experiencing some hauntings. And so he actually made it onto an episode of Ghost Adventures. So after that, he got a hold of us through Chad Brummett, and we went and did an investigation there, and we brought along a psychic with us. And it was one of the more interesting investigations, because not only were we capturing evidence on our devices, we also had this psychic with us that was sort of corroborating. So you kind of had these two streams coming at you. You had the scientific end, where we're actually capturing EVP and images on the SLS camera. And then you had the psychic along with us, kind of confirming everything in tandem. So that was one of the more interesting episodes we've done.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I'm happy to hear that. So these are, and I'll give you guys a chance to plug at the end of the show again, but these are things that people could go on your YouTube channel and go watch right now, correct?
Yeah.
Excellent.
And I got to say too, Bob, a very neat Ninja Turtles collection.
I wanted to comment on that. I have people that come on the show, and they always have the cool backgrounds. But I think you guys have my award for my absolute favorite background.
Only like a tiny fraction. Yeah. Of this
if you see the other end, there's a fully functional Proton Pack, full Batman 89 collection.
Look at that.
The Superman collection, the Masters of the Universe. It's a fun.
You know, I got to point out that the paranormal community is all cut from, I think, the same cloth, because outside the world of the paranormal, I think we're all just really big dorks, because I also have the 1-1 proton pack sitting at home that I dress up in, and so it's always nice to meet the same people from cloth.
And that's how we bonded. We're both nerds. We started dating, we got into the ghost hunting scene together, and of course we meet Adam Leone from the Ghostbuster scene. So
and here we are. It's Ghostbusters in a weird way, and I don't talk about my Ghostbuster community as much on the show, but it's always funny how, like, full circle paranormal and the Ghostbusters have, like, led into my life leading up to what I do now for a full-time living. It's just weird. Okay, now, the reason why we're here and we're all together, we're talking about a ghost story from Mexico in the utmost northern state, and it bleeds kind of into New Mexico. And I want to point out that according to Puzzle Block Horror, their first line of the story goes, Mexico has enough folklore and urban legends to make H.P. Lovecraft cancel his flight, though none are as menacing and confrontational as the dreaded La Mala Hora. What do you guys know about the story down by you?
Well, it's one of those sort of northern New Mexico stories that has always been sort of taboo. One of the things about New Mexican culture and even Native American culture are there are just certain things that are taboo, and to speak it is to invite it into your life. So a lot of people don't really talk about it here, but I guess the quick and dirty of it would be the closest thing I could compare it to is your Resurrection Mary.
Yes.
Meeting Llorona.
Okay.
And it's sort of a mixture of those two folklores. So she's more of a siren that is said to wander the streets at night, and she'll lure men along, and she'll actually trick them into believing that it's their loved one, whether their wife or their girlfriend or whatever. And she pretty much lures them away and then just completely messes with their head. To the point where they go insane.
Wow, Cal.
Keep men at home at night.
You know, we always talk, sometimes when you look at the logical sense behind a ghost story and you're like, oh, what causes the ghost story? Why do we tell these stories? And they think this is just to keep men at home.
Yeah. Because she will pretend to be your wife. So, like, right there, I mean.
Yeah.
So I'm going to read a little bit about the legend from Puzzle Box Horror, and we're going to tie back into our friends here in the community. La Mala Hora, and how's my enunciation on that, by the way? Am I doing a good job? Hora.
Hora.
Yeah, we tried. This has been an ongoing gag. We did a La Llorona episode.
We just kind of silent.
Yeah, it's almost an O
aura.
Sound.
So it's aura.
It's our, but it's aura.
I we did a La Llorona episode several years ago, and I practiced for hours to get that enunciation right. And I can't roll my R's, guys.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, it's fine.
So the legend relates back to the devil's hour, known as the witching hour, as a time as many knows as 3 a.m. and at a time when one might suddenly awake for no perceptible reason with an acute sense of dread wallowing in their stomach. This uncanny hour has been associated with the practice of witchcraft, endued with the great satanic significance, and even held accountable for the true story. And I use the word true story in quotations of the Amityville Horror, though residents of Mexico and New Mexico know it as something rather more tangible and far more horrifying. In 1910, the phenomenon was described by Aurelio Espinosa as a malicious entity that stalked crossroads around Mexico at night. And remember, folks, crossroads are important. We'll get to that in a moment. It would hunt, torment, and even kill anyone brave enough to ignore the tales and travel home alone at such an hour, specifically men. If these individuals were unfortunate enough to come across the dreaded La Mala Hora and gaze headlong into it, they would be driven hideously and irreversibly insane. And it's a very big Lovecraftian lore kind of put together. And because of this, this particular spirit is said to be more feared than the devil himself. Most of Mexico flat out refuses to talk about it, and here we are talking about it anyway, changing the subject and simply referring it to as an evil thing. And I gotta, before I move on here, is that, you kind of touched on this at the beginning of the story. When we talk about, like, ghost stories in where you guys are at in kind of that New Mexico area, you said that some folk don't like to mention this particular spirit. Is this a story? Is this the common thing amongst the spirit, you know, ghost stories in general, or is it specific things that they don't want to talk about?
So it's kind of interesting. So Tommy's Hispanic. I actually grew up Native American. So we each kind of bring our own aspect into like what we grew up knowing to be taboo, I guess. So like, sure. Navajos, their taboo stuff is more like their witchcraft and their like skinwalkers and stuff like that. You don't really talk about it because that welcomes it into your life kind of thing. And as far as this particular story, it's really interesting here in New Mexico. There's a lot of regional stories and stuff. And I think this one's more like a northern New Mexico kind of thing, which is, some of your families are from around there.
Yeah, so we're in Albuquerque, which is more central
to lower.
Yeah, so when you hear something from up north, you're just like, ah, those crazy North Daniels. What are they?
Yeah. the little places up in the forest.
Yeah, but it is very taboo. And same thing with Llorona. There are some regions and some aspects of the population that won't even, like you bring it up and they're just like, nope. And we ran into that when we were doing an episode up in, there's a place called Madrid, which is about an hour and a half away from Albuquerque. And we ran into sort of that same, the same issue with some of the locals that didn't want to talk about Llorona when we went into the Arroyo, and we actually caught an EVP of something screaming in the ditch. So yeah, it's very taboo. Like Kamani said, in Native and Hispanic culture, just to say the names, invite it into your life, and you're pretty much rolling out the welcome mat for it.
Well, I'm sorry if you guys are throwing out the welcome mat for this. I'll give you guys the family discount if I have to come down there and do an exorcism.
Oh no, we're problem starters. I mean, we've got a cemetery sign hanging in our kitchen from Dawson Cemetery. Wow. So there's a cemetery that's about 150 years old. And we have the original sign that hung over the cemetery gates.
It's a historic monument
now. Yeah, about 200 people died in a mining two separate mining accidents there. And what do? We go over there and we buy the sign. So, yeah, so we're all about rolling out that welcome mat.
All right, let's move on back to the legend here a little bit more. Takes great pleasure in driving its victims mad. Not only this, but it will often attack helpless travelers, paralyzing them in their tracks and brutalizing their weakened forms. After being suffocated by the fiend, their bodies are left on the side of the road to be discovered by somebody else down the line. In Chiapas, am I pronouncing that right, by the way?
Yeah.
In Chiapas, the southernmost state of Mexico, the insidious entity is told to take form of a beautiful woman, sometimes dressed in white. There we go. Back
there
to the woman in white, Count Panic.
Yeah.
And here I got one for you.
What's
not
that?
Only dressed in white, but sometimes also dressed in black.
Wow, how about that? A mixture sometimes.
This ink
wardrobe changes.
Wardrobe changes, there you go. This incarnation in its diversely gruesome behaviors come across like some kind of demented video game gone rogue. When dressed in white, the spirit is said to be gentler and more graceful. She hypnotizes the weary travelers who, if they don't take notice, the space between their feet and the ground, or the fact that her toes are backwards, or the fact that their lanterns have stopped working, all the sense of direction seems to be lost, will follow her obediently into wherever the peril she chooses. Perhaps this will be off the edge of a ravine, or perhaps in the front of a nearby car. Now, that's the entity that we get Count Panic. I'm telling you right now. Shows up in white. She's going to be like, hey, how you doing? Yeah, Count Panic's like, oh, what's going on? And then notice that her feet are turned backwards.
Yeah.
And then she's going to lead you off a ravine, man.
Yeah, you know what? That's how it always goes, it seems like, with those ladies.
Now, however, if you catch her in black, that is when she's at her most aggressive. She will stop a traveler by any means and attack directly with her pointed nails. The strong-willed should hope to meet her on a white night, while no one should hope to see her in black. Now, I want to ask you two the significance of a wardrobe change, or the fact that, you know, something, if it appears in white, still maniacally as evil as the one in black, but you might just get talked to differently. Is that, where do you think that part of the story comes in at? Because it's still both, it's not like the white, you know, you catch her in white and she's going to be all nice and sweet. She's still going to kill you. But maybe a little bit more nicer than if you catch her in black. Where do you guys think that story comes from, or where that significance of a wardrobe change kind of falls into place?
I would say just the black probably would be more of a sinister thing, you know, because white you can kind of see in darkness. You can see an outline of it, and it might be your eyes, you know, playing tricks on you. But if there's something black in a black, like something that's even blacker than what you're seeing, I would just say that is more menacing.
I'd also say that the black wardrobe change is probably more other side of the border. I'd say the white wardrobe would be more northern.
Yeah.
And so that's probably where you get the two stories kind of colliding culturally.
Well, why do you suppose that is?
Well, if you ever go to funerals down south, it's all black. And up north, it would be all white.
No, that's fascinating. I'm going to ask you guys, because you do your investigations down there. In Hispanic culture, when there's, you know, a spirit to be seen, up here we always talk about the woman in white. Down there, is the woman in white equivalent to the woman in black? Is that mostly how, you know, ghost sightings are down there?
Yeah. Actually, it's interesting, because a lot of the ghost sightings you would hear of around this region look like just regular people. Hmm. Nope. You never really hear colors.
Unless it's like La Llorona. That one is the woman in white.
Yeah. But I couldn't really tell you culturally why there would be a difference between white and black.
Oh, that's. Yeah. I'm not sure. It seems, again, you hear about mostly predominantly white here, right?
Bob, yeah.
But black too. It could be a thing. And I guess there's a whole thing with the history of like what color represents what kind of element. But. Just interesting to get that switch off right there. So you never know really who you're going to get. But guys, it's quite eerie if you ask me at the end of the day.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to finish up the legend here. We're going to talk a little bit more about it on the southern border of the United States in the state of New Mexico, which is why we're here with you guys this evening. Seems to appear much more closer to the original Espinosa's original description. In the New Mexico side of the story, it is mostly seen in the black abstract form, like a fleece of wool, which in this incarnation is only told to be seen when death is soon to befall a loved one. And so in this case, now we're talking that this thing not only, if you see it, it'll kill you, but if you see it in New Mexico, it's apparently the same name, but this is more of a harbinger of doom. You guys want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that might also tie into Native culture, because crows have a lot to do with that.
Owls.
I'm sorry. Owls have a lot to do with that.
So culturally, like for Natives, if you see an owl, they're like, you see one before someone's going to die, or like they're just an omen of like bad, like just the ultimate bad. So I'm thinking it could probably play into that too.
Yeah, it could have stemmed from something like that. And again, here it's a melting pot. You have Native culture and you have Mexican culture, and they sort of collide. And so a lot of these stories are derived from both Native and Hispanic culture. So as you're talking, as we get further up north, it appears something more fleece-like that could tie directly back to the Native omen of seeing an owl before someone dies.
Wow. See, I never thought about the owl as like a creature of death.
Yeah. On the res where Kamani's from, I mean, they'll shoot an owl if they see it.
Really?
I mean, it's,
no kidding.
I shot an owl off the top of our roof one time, and
yeah.
Hey, no, that's fair.
I stayed home from school that day, smoked a little bit, and there's a shoot like on top of my house, and there's an owl. So yeah, my aunts are like super superstitious.
Yeah, so like we were saying, the version you're mentioning right now, the fleece, the wool version of this siren, could actually be derived from Native American folklore culture, mixed with the other side of the border where you see her in all white. And that's the beautiful thing about doing these investigations here. It's just such a melting pot, and you can kind of tie things back to certain cultures. And it's really interesting once you start diving into it.
Yeah, it's always crow or a raven, but yeah. An owl. Owl is supposed to be like a symbol of life. Maybe I'm wrong about this, Bob. Maybe I don't know anything about owls.
Or I would say, so a lot of the Plains Indians have the same concept, the Comanche, Navajos, and mostly Navajos, but some of the Pueblos are also the same way, too.
Because we are a live show at the end of the day, too, we get callers. It's unusual that someone calls this late in the evening, so we have a live caller, and we will take them as soon as Count gets the phone over with somebody mistakenly ordering
we'll
a pizza.
Right now.
Take the caller live.
We got John here.
John, you're on the air. I haven't heard from you in a hot minute. The phone lines have been quiet.
Hey, good evening, Bob. Well, like you say, weekish with the baseball situation, so, you know, it's listening to your fascinating guest last week, and I have to say good evening to the Garcias.
Hello, thank you.
So what's on your mind tonight, John?
I don't see you, but I'm listening to you, and certainly sound like a jovial couple, am I correct?
Oh, we're a blast. We're a blast. You love us.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, I'm nice, very comical, and, you know, so if I may ask, how did you guys meet? And was it, at a paranormal investigation? And if so,
no.
What would that
be? We met on Tinder.
We swiped right.
Okay.
It's a dating.
John, you see, people meet on the internet these days for dating.
We met on Tinder. And originally, I was just going to take her into the woods and strangle her, but then I fell in love with her.
I literally went into the woods.
Our first date was her going into the woods alone with me.
We got Mexican food, new Mexican food, and went into the woods.
And then I said, do you want to go back to my house and play with my proton pack? And she said, absolutely. And we've been together ever since, Bob.
Well, I'm foolish, and I love Mexican food, too. But, I mean, you know, whether you meet on the internet or not, you have to have some. You're both paranormal investigators, right? So you have to have that sort of interest where you guys were communicating on the internet and say, hey, you know, I'm the one for her, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And for us, it's more of a cultural thing. We like to go around and explore folklore. And it's just interesting. Like I said, it's this melting pot here. And just the characters you meet and the stories they tell.
I'm a history nerd, so I love the history that ghost things kind of play into. You end up having to learn about the history of different regions and what people believe then and now. And
oh, yeah, and even the buildings themselves. Like, we did an investigation at this place called El Rancho, which was this old mansion that was turned into a place for film crews to stay back in the 30s and 40s. And we stayed there, and that was one of the most haunted places we've ever been to. So it's just the history, the culture, and that's how we kind of connected.
Well, that's great. Well, you certainly, like I said, a very interesting couple, and I want to continue listening to your story. So thanks for coming on the air, and good luck with you.
Thank you.
Nice talk to you.
Thanks for calling in, John. We appreciate you.
All right, Bob. Take care.
So before I before we wrap up the story here of our Hispanic ghosts, I guess the question is, who broke the paranormal thing to who first? Who's like, you know, I'm really into dead things. That's a good question. I think John was trying to ask, but didn't get it across. So who broke the paranormal thing to who first?
We actually did. There's a really awesome ghost tour in Old Town that we kind of went to together, brought the kids along and just kind of did like a...
Yeah, it was an impromptu... we're both ghost heads, so we love Ghostbusters. We love scary movies. So we did this impromptu ghost tour in Old Town, Albuquerque, which was actually battleground, one of the Civil War battlegrounds. And that's where we met some of the people in the sort of the paranormal community here. And we just fell in love with it. So we both kind of said, well, you know, let's pursue this. Let's start buying some of the gear and doing this on our own time.
Stay at the haunted places.
Yeah, and that became our thing. Like, most people like to have, like, these sexy getaways. And our thing is, well, screw that. Let's go find, like, the most haunted place and try to make contact with something.
Yes.
And you guys know in the paranormal community, there is no such thing as staying at the Ritz in the paranormal. Well, I guess there is. Oh, yeah. There is the nice upscale hotels that are haunted. Most of the time, you're staying in drab, so nice condition.
Yeah.
We stayed at this one place, St. James Hotel in Cimarron. And it's actually, look it up, it's, like, top three haunted places pretty much anywhere, and the little rickety bed we slept on folded in the middle, so we would just roll into the middle.
Because they keep like all of the
everything's
original.
Authentic. Everything's
like,
authentic.
There's
1800s.
No TV in there. Like, it's authentic.
That's like, but surprisingly, we didn't get too much evidence. We got a tapping on a pane of glass, and that was about it.
So real quick, we're going to finish up the story with our ghost here. So we have three different versions of the story, right? Well, one version where she can appear in white and appear in black. And then we have that she appears in black all the time and just tells you when somebody's going to die near you. Do you think it is, when people use the same name, if you guys want to sit down and say, yes, the spirit actually exists concrete, I could prove it, I know it exists, is it the same spirit haunting the, you know, the southern states of Mexico as it is in New Mexico? Is it the same type of spirit? Or is it just, as it crossed over, it kept the same name, but the story itself changed? Same spirit, different spirit.
I think it kept the same name, and as the story moved up north, it changed like a game of telephone. That's just my personal belief.
And what about yours?
I would probably agree with Tommy, because I mean there's just certain things that probably have slightly changed over time depending on where you are, and that kind of goes with just about any ghost story that becomes a lore like that.
Yeah, and it's just interesting you bring that up, because a lot of these ghost stories do start further south, and as they move their way further north, northern New Mexico, even into Colorado, the aspects of the story do tend to change, and the names do tend to stay the same, even with Llorona. So yeah, that's just interesting how the stories can travel northward, and just it runs through this filter of different cultures as it's going up. And yeah, so the stories definitely do seem to change.
So we're running a little out of time here, but before we cut loose, I want you guys to plug all the stuff. Tell me about what people can find you on, all your platforms, all that good jazz. You're working on a book, whatever it might be. Plug all the stuff before I praise you for coming on, because I had a really good time.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Well, so we do have a Facebook, but no one's ever really on that. We do have an Instagram that's very active. And again, that look for That's Some Scary SH exclamation point P. And you can also find us on YouTube. That's where we have all the full episodes. And that's about it, right?
I think you had a Twitter, but
I have a Twitter, but we're not really on that. We also have a TikTok same name. You can follow that. But we're mostly active on Instagram and YouTube.
And they were on Tinder, too. They were on Tinder.
They were on Tinder.
Not anymore.
You know, if I was to sit down and develop an app, it'd be a paranormal app where I could be like, I want to match with a paranormal investigator in the area that I'm traveling with. I would swipe right on you guys for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And if you're ever down this way, hit us up. We'll take you to some of the most haunted places we know of down here.
I would love that. Real quick, too, do you guys have merch for sale? Because I'm in love with
your
logo.
We do. If you go to our Instagram page, we have hats and shirts.
Yep.
I would like.
And
my earrings were just a gift.
Yeah, I custom made those. There's a local shop here called Two Stoned Betty's that make jewelry. So I commissioned them to make those. But if you go to our Instagram page, you can find hats and shirts, and that's about it. That's all we pretty much have for now.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys have a good time on the show?
We loved it. Oh, this was one of the best interviews. This was so much fun.
I like to pretend I'm a good interview sometimes, and I want to point out that usually, guys, when I book a guest, we have time in advance to talk it out and what we're going to do. Our lovely couple that joined us tonight got word about 6 hours ago that they were coming on the show, and it was a quick, Adam hooked us up. Can I talk to you about this? I can help you with that. I can speak the language enough. And it was pretty much, we're shooting in the dark. They don't know me. I don't know them. We didn't speak more than 5 minutes. But I will tell you that this is a great interview. I got to have some good laughs. And it's amazing when you meet the good people in the paranormal community, and you guys can probably attest. When you sift through the drama that's involved in our community, which there is a lot of, once you sift through that and you find the good people, I feel like I had a straight conversation with you guys that I feel like I've known you for years. And just the, you know, 45 minutes that we were talking. And I just, you know, I hope you guys had as much fun as I did.
Absolutely.
Oh, we're the good kind of weirdos, Bob.
Absolutely. I could tell.
If you ever want to talk skinwalkers, I got you on that one. I got tons of stories when I used to live out on the reservation.
I would love to do it. I want to revisit the skinwalker episode. And then I also need to do a revisit because we haven't done it since we've been in podcast form. A lot of your own episodes. So we'll have to have you guys back on.
We've got one of those.
Yeah. So when it sounds like we're already developing the next couple of times we're going to have them on. The show, but I usually when people get ready to leave, I make them when they make me laugh, I make you guys make them do like an anecdote, a goodbye, something, a quote, a piece of advice, a piece of poetry. Can you guys each give a farewell to the audience tonight in your own ways?
A piece of advice?
It could be anything.
No wooden nickels.
Okay,
you're not fully clean unless you're zestfully clean. I live by that.
Zesty, if you're listening to this show, I think you could sponsor either the Paranormal Investigation Group down in New Mexico, or you could sponsor this show, Bob After Dark Found Online, or if you listen to my podcast. Compank, do you have anything you'd like to say to close out the show tonight? As he's sitting there texting on his phone.
Oh. Bob, sorry, I was on Tinder.
Are you getting your swipes in?
You caught me on my phone? Oh, this is embarrassing. I didn't know the camera's on me. How about that?
Con, so do you got something you would like to say to the audience other than make sure you get your swipes
always
in?
Swipe right. Always swipe right. Always.
I guess that leaves me.
Yeah, what do you got?
All right. To Mom, I just want to wish you good night. And Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're having a good and happy time. To Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are: not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.